obviously haunted.
Obviously.
Did you get the email that I forwarded to you? Did you get the email from my aunt?
About the... Why did the ghost cross the road? Yes, that was okay. Cute.
Why did the ghost cross the road? To get to the other side. Thank you, my wonderful aunt, for sending us that delightful joke. I laughed so hard because that's like my favorite kind of humor. And I had to forward it to you, just in case. Also, your glass with ice in it is loud. Please, is that white wine? Is that iced white wine?
Yeah.
Oh my god, Allie.
What? Why is that bad?
No, it's not.
I ran out of beer, and my mom had a large bottle of wine, so I stole it.
And put ice in it? Ice in your wine?
Well, it was warm.
Ew, white wine should be chilled.
No shit, that's why there's ice in it.
That's amazing. Okay, well, I found this is a random, like, shout out for someone who probably doesn't listen to the podcast, but I found a Twitter account today, or no, it was an Instagram account, and it's called Spook Eats. And this woman does like a travel blog of haunted restaurants.
Oh, wow.
So cool. So now I'm like following her. And the first one that I saw was, it was an image and it was like a cocktail. And she was talking about this cocktail that was based or like named for one of the women who was executed during the Salem witch trials.
Huh.
But I was like, oh, no, now I have to read this woman's whole blog to see if there's any, like, amazing restaurants for us to go eat at. But that was exciting. So, hi, Spook Eats, if you listen. I'm, like, waving and looking at the microphone as though...
Hello.
Hi, Spook Eats. Hello. So that was really cool. So if anybody out there in the world is interested in potentially visiting some... haunted restaurants, I would check out her blog and see what she has to offer.
That's cool.
Blah blah blah. Okay, so I've got a really good one. Oh, but we have to like introduce ourselves. It's probably Jeff. Were you like holding your breath?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm Becky.
And I'm Allie.
And New England is haunted. So today's story is another New Hampshire story. it's from Benton, New Hampshire. Benton? Or do you say Benton?
I'm not that familiar with Benton. 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 Probably Benton.
So maybe you're more familiar with Mount Moosilauk?
Yep.
Okay. So that's really, we're really talking about Mount Moosilauk. Am I saying that correctly?
I believe so.
Okay. This is the story of Benton's maniacal evil doctor, the man of the mountain.
Creepy.
Do you know anything about this?
No.
That is awesome. Okay, so I have to tell you before, like, this is just a disclaimer for everybody, like, please don't at me. This story isn't exactly a haunting, but it could potentially be a haunting, so I guess you can be the judge. But I'll tell you the legend part of it first, and then we'll kind of talk about the history, and then we'll talk about whether or not it could be a haunting, and if not, what it could be, and if so, like, what it is. And have you ever been there? Mount Moosilauk?
I don't know if I've actually been there. It's super familiar, but I don't know if it's because I've been there or if because people have just talked about it.
Okay. Well, are you, like, a hiker? Do you hike? I mean, we never hiked, really, but...
I don't.
No, me.
Very much.
This is kind of a hiking one, but whatever. Okay, so here's the story. there is a boy, his name is Tom Benton, and he grew up in this teeny little town that would eventually be called Benton, North Carolina, but started out as, whatever, started out as some different town. If I find it, I'll do a correction. So it would eventually be Benton, North, or New Hampshire. Did I say North Carolina?
You did say North Carolina, and that's why I was like, what?
What are you talking about? So Tom Benton grew up in this teeny little, like, area of New Hampshire around Mount Moosilauk that would eventually be the township of Benton. And he was sort of the golden child. He grew up in going to school in this, like, one-room schoolhouse, and by the time he was, you know, like, the equivalent of fifth grade, like, he was, like, 10, he had already learned everything that the teacher could teach him. Like, his knowledge was starting to surpass the person who was teaching in that one-room schoolhouse. This was during a time when, like, people didn't even learn. I mean, they learned, like, really basic, like, they could read, and maybe they could do, like, really basic math, but he just wanted more and more and more knowledge. So a judge from Plymouth, New Hampshire?
Yep. Okay. I work in Plymouth.
Oh. So a judge from Plymouth, New Hampshire took Tom in. So he had, so yeah, it took him away from his parents, but, like, gave him access to a better education and this huge library that this judge had in his home. And Tom just read every book that he could get his hands on. And as he got older, even though the judge wanted him to study law, Tom decided that his real love was medicine. So he really wanted to study and be a doctor. And it turned out that he actually had quite a talent for it. So he was invited to study in the best medical school in the world, which at the time was in Heidelberg, Germany. This was way too expensive for his family to pay for. It was way too expensive for the judge to pay for, even at that time. Because it was not only tuition, but it was the travel abroad and room and board for him to go to Germany and study. And it was like the late 1700s. So, like, the judge might have been rich, but, like, nobody was that rich, right?
Yeah.
So the way they sort of dealt with this is they basically crowdsourced it, like, super before their time. They, like, started a Kickstarter. No, I'm kidding. But they did. They went to all of the neighboring townships in the area, and they basically said, Tom will go and study at the best medical school in the world, and then he agrees to come back and be the doctor for this whole area in New Hampshire.
Hmm.
And it worked. People just chipped in money, and eventually they had enough money, and they send him to Germany. So this kid who just wows everybody with his intellect goes to Germany, but he doesn't speak German. So at first, he's really behind, and he doesn't have any friends, and he doesn't feel like he fits in anywhere, and it's actually a real struggle. But he's a really smart kid. One of his professors takes him under his wing. And pretty soon, Tom has learned German and is even doing better than his native German classmates in classes. He's just really shining in this school. And a lot of it is thanks to this professor who, you know, became his mentor.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little weird that Tom noticed that his mentor really also didn't have or didn't seem to have a lot of friends. Like, other students really respected him, and the lecture hall was always full for his classes, but he sat alone when he ate in the cafeteria, and he didn't ever have plans in the evenings and had a lot of free time to help Tom with his studies. And there were some rumors around him. His research wasn't exactly, it wasn't conventional he sort of just blew it off. He formed a really close relationship with this man, and this professor helped him out a lot. But early on in Tom's career in the university, his mentor passed away. He was very old. He passed away of old age.
It's too bad.
Yeah, it is too bad. But in this, like, really kind of crazy, unprofessional move, the professor left Tom a huge inheritance. So he had no family, I guess. He didn't have any family or anything. And he left him this big inheritance. It wasn't like, it was some money. Not a huge amount of money, but more than that, it was all of his books and all of his research. So all of his collected papers and research from all of his time as a doctor. And that was, you know, worth more than money to Tom at the time. In fact, there was so much that he couldn't really go through it all. It was just, he knew that it was important. So as he slowly over the years went through it, he started to notice that a lot of this research seemed to be focused around finding the key to eternal life.
Oh, boy.
It's like Frankenstein. So, it's Frankenstein. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
Young Frankenstein?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
You said Frankenstein like it was a different movie. I've seen Young Frankenstein, yes.
Because Young Frankenstein, he says, when they call him Frankenstein, and he says, it's Frankenstein. And then Igor, he says, Igor. And Igor says, it's Igor.
Jeez.
I loved that movie when I was a kid. I thought that was so, oh, okay, whatever. Sorry. Anyway. It's Frankenstein. So he... I lost my place.
Eternal life.
So Tom finishes his degree. He goes home, and just like he promises, he goes back to his area in New Hampshire, to the Mount Musilac area, and starts treating everyone in that area. And he really quickly becomes known as a healer. He has a great bedside manner. People really like him, but also he just seems to have a talent for helping people and helping cure people of, you know, whatever disease, of what ails them. He gets himself a girl. So he's got this great practice. He's got this pretty girl. He's got everybody loving him. He's got people trying to get him to come and work in the big city, and he's like, no, I love the country life. Everything I have here. Why would I need anything else? His old mentor's crazy Frankenstein stuff is put away in a closet somewhere and forgotten about, because he's just living the dream. Then things get crazy. Around 1816, his fiance dies.
What?
His fiance dies of typhoid fever. Ugh. A lot of people died of typhoid fever. But Tom, with his reputation as being a healer and just having been the top of every class and having this talent for medicine, is heartbroken not only because he's lost his fiance, but because he blames himself for not being able to heal her.
Aw, that's too bad.
Yeah, it is. So he kind of becomes reclusive. Tom starts missing appointments. He starts missing his rounds at the hospitals. He eventually is half forced, half voluntarily just gives up his medical practice altogether.
Oof.
Because he can't pull himself together. He can't get his shit together anymore. So he moves away from the town and moves into a shack on the top, the very top of Mount Musilac.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
So he's been gone, and people still see him. They see him in town, you know, every once in a while. He has to come in for provisions or for food, but it's to the point where people who considered themselves his good friends, he won't even say hello to them anymore.
Hmm.
So he's just turned into a really bitter old man. He is just being a real dick. Well, so pretty soon, animals start going missing.
Oh, boy.
People start losing track of their livestock, and then they find them later discarded somewhere on the mountain. Eventually, these disappearances begin to escalate. A dead body goes missing off the back of an undertaker's wagon. So, like, it was headed to be embalmed or whatever, and it just goes missing. They find it. They find the body, and they find that there's a wound, a new wound, behind the left ear on this dead body. So they start paying attention, and now, you know, animals are still going missing, and when they find animals, they find that the animals all have wounds behind their ears.
That's strange.
Dr. Benton completely disappears. He goes off the face of the earth. His friends even go up to check on him in his shack on the top of the mountain, and he's abandoned it. There's no one left in the cabin. I don't think anyone's put it together yet, the connection, but this is starting to get weird. In 1825, so almost 10 years after the death of his fiance, a woman sees a man in a black cape snatch her toddler daughter out of the backyard where she is playing and run into the woods with her.
Oh my God, I can't imagine seeing that.
So she freaks out, and a search party climbs up Mount Musilak, and there are already rumors happening, so they think that they're pretty sure that it's Doc Benton, because of all the disappearances, and, like, bodies have been going missing, and graves have been robbed, and they think, oh no, we have to go and get him. Well, they track him down, and they see footprints, and they realize that they're close on his trail, and the footprints, no shoes, mind you, just footprints, go off into a ravine. So they think that they've cornered him, and it's all really close, right? They know that he's right there. They can even hear evidence of someone running ahead of them. They hit the end of the ravine, and it's just a straight cliff wall up, you know, 40, 50 feet into the air. And there's no Benton, no sign of Benton or the girl. The search party hears this maniacal laughter at the top of the cliff. They look up. They see Benton in his black cape with the girl in his arms on top of the cliff, but they can't do anything. He's just too high. They even start to reach. They start to climb, and the cliff wall is completely sheer. There's no way to even get up it. They don't even know how he got up there.
Weird.
To everyone's horror.
No, don't throw the baby.
He throws the baby.
Ah, oh, come on.
She was already dead.
Ah.
She was already dead. They recover her body, and they find a wound behind her left ear. Nobody ever sees Benton again.
So it's like this wound is what's causing their death? So he's doing something with their brain, maybe?
Oh, I don't know. Well, so I have a theory. And then my dad had a theory and gave it to me, like, said, oh, I think it's this. And I was like, oh, that sounds good. But I don't know anatomy, so I don't know how legit it was. But yeah, it seems like definitely the wound was the purpose of his stealing of bodies or whatever. Because he took, you know, he started with livestock, and even the ones from the beginning, probably they had the wound too, but they just didn't know to look for them. And then when he started stealing bodies, like, he started with dead bodies, and those dead bodies had the wounds. So by the time he got to, like, kidnapping, and apparently this was the last time.
So that's like he needed a live child to get whatever he needed to get for eternal life.
Mm, That's what it seems like. Maybe he was continuing his mentor's insidious research. Because, I mean, he loses the love of his life to a disease that, like, he really had no power to cure. So a lot of people might go the other way and, like, want to join their loved one. But it seems like instead he decided that he was going to figure out a way to never have to die.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit of the history. And then the haunting, because the haunting's really creepy. Okay. So the history of it, the town itself, and I'm really pissed at myself for not writing what the town, like not typing out what the town was originally called. But the town was named for someone named Tom Benton, Thomas H. Benton. But this Tom Benton that it was named for was actually a U.S. senator from Missouri. And they named Benton, New Hampshire for Thomas Benton because he championed westward expansion. I'm not sure, like, why New Hampshire is so excited about westward expansion, but are you looking it up?
I'm looking up Benton on the map, and it's west of Lincoln and Woodstock, and I used to teach in Lincoln and Woodstock, which is kind of interesting.
And you've never heard of this story?
No.
Okay. So Thomas Benton, the senator, was actually, that's why I said North Carolina earlier. Thomas Benton was born in North Carolina in 1790. So it seems like a little bit of a coincidence that the guy that the town was named for and the guy from this story had the same kind of life span. You know what I mean? We're like born in the same time. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. As of the 2000 census, the population of Benton, New Hampshire was less than 500 people in the whole town.
Wow.
What do you even do?
Oh, no, I've heard worse. I mean, my dad grew up in a town in northern New Hampshire called Tinkerville, and there were 6 people in that town, and that was just my dad and his family.
Wait, they were the whole town?
Yeah. They lived above the Tinkerville Country Store, and they owned the Tinkerville Country Store, and it was just them.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. Maybe he's just lying, but I don't know. But it's there. If you look up Tinkerville, it's up there near Lyman, New Hampshire.
That's nuts. I'm sure that, I mean, 6 people, that sounds like an exaggeration. Maybe there were 12. Maybe there was like one other family.
He likes to say there were 6 people when everybody was home.
Oh, I love it. Well, so, Dartmouth College has apparently, do you call it Dartmouth College or do you just call it Dartmouth?
We just call it Dartmouth, usually.
Okay. So, Dartmouth has sort of commandeered this story of Doc Benton. They have land on Mount Moosilauk, which I thought was weird because I looked it up and apparently that's like over an hour away from where Dartmouth is in Hanover, but they have, like, land there, and they take the freshman class out there every year and, like, tell them this ghost story as part of, like, freshman orientation.
That's weird.
I mean, it's one of those weird college traditions that you're like, why? Like, what does this even have to do with Dartmouth? But I don't know. Sure. Okay. Maybe it's because he was a doctor.
It's like, this is what will happen to you if you go mad.
Right? Maybe. I don't know. So the haunting is pretty cool, actually. Like, the idea of it being a haunting, or maybe not a haunting, is that people have seen or continued to see this old man in a black cape on Mount Moosilauk. Like, still see him. Like, contemporary sightings. And he apparently, animals are found dead or hikers go missing or whatever, and people in the area will blame it on Doc Benton.
Hmm.
There's a, not a resort, but like a cabin kind of at the summit of Mount Moosilauk called Prospect House. And it was built in the 1860s. So that was a pretty long time after this story is supposed to have taken place. But when it was built, it was a really popular thing for there to be these cabins at the tops of mountains, and hikers would go up and, you know, hike up the mountain, and then you'd like get your beer and maybe stay the night, and then you'd go down the mountain the next day. And so they were sort of popping up on mountains all over the place, but for whatever reason, this one was not doing well. Like, everybody came out for its grand opening, like, famous people from all over New England came out for its grand opening, but nobody, everyone was too scared to stay the night because they were too afraid of Doc Benton.
Ooh.
Yeah. And the Prospect House, it was originally the Tip Top House. It wanted to prove that there was no, like, that Doc Benton wasn't still around, so they hired some people over the winter months when you couldn't hike up there to stay up there. And it was two hunters, two, like, big, burly, hunting dudes. And they were like, we're not afraid of no scrawny old dude. So they were not worried. That was free room and board for the winter, and they were perfectly happy to do it. Well, there's this huge storm that comes in, the first huge storm that comes in, and one of the tie lines outside comes loose and starts whipping around in the wind. So one of the hunters goes out to secure it, never comes back.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hunter goes out, never comes back. His friend decides, okay, he's got a... write a note in the thing, this is what happened. So they're like keeping logs, right? Jim went out to secure the thing, hasn't come back. I'm going out to find him. Also never comes back. They never find their bodies. They're just gone. So.
Okay. Well, that could just be New Hampshire awful storms. But okay, keep going.
So that's sort of a thing. And they, you know, they blame it on Doc Benton. But eventually, the lodge, after it changes its name to the Prospect House, it becomes pretty successful, and it has sort of a heyday between the 1880s and the 1920s. Like, people come all the time. It's got lots of hikers and everything. And people who knew the legend said Doc Benton must have died because nothing bad was happening. But around this time, hikers would go out, and obviously it was became sort of a local legend at the time, like, watch out, because if you go hiking on these certain trails, people will have hands reach out and grab them and trip them, or push them off of a cliff, or something, you know, to that effect. Picnickers and things would see an old man in a black cape with gray hair running off toward the tree line or something like that. Or they would, like, see a hand reach out from under a bush and steal a piece of food off of a picnic blanket, like a gnarled old hand.
Weird.
Super weird. So in the 1920s, as business is winding down, the land at the Tip Top House and the Tip Top House were donated to Dartmouth College. The story is adopted by Dartmouth, and they take people out there to Mount Moosilauk. But in the 70s, there's a big fire, and the Tip Top House burns to the ground. And the only thing that's left there was the foundation. So it's, from what I read at that point, it was already pretty run down. Like, they weren't really, like, the house was still there, but they weren't, people weren't really staying there, right? But now it's gone. It's just the foundation that's left. And there are still stories from hikers on the mountains. And most of them are pretty terrible. I mean, it's like stories about people who get pushed and have really long falls, or who see someone and have like rocks fall on them or something like that. You know, so it's usually people who have been injured in some way on their hike, and they're recounting the story of how they got injured, which is pretty terrible.
Yeah. I wonder if any of my friends who are hikers have had any experiences with that. We'll see if they listen.
They should email us and let us know.
Yes, they should.
I don't know. So that's the story. That's so ghost or super old guy.
Yeah. Maybe he's just, maybe he has found the answer to eternal life and he just wants to mess with people.
Maybe, but don't, I mean, I've always kind of wondered about that. Like, even if you did find the answer to eternal life, would you just keep aging forever and just not die? But like,
I don't know, because that would just be awful.
It would be awful. Like, you just look like a mummy or like the crypt keeper or something.
Yeah, and you just have aching bones all the time.
Oh, I'm 36 and my knees and my feet hurt constantly. I feel like I can't. If I was like 300 years old, no thank you. No, no thank you.
But I think that we should like go for a hike up this mountain and find the foundation.
I feel like that's too strenuous of a hike for me. Can we go for like an ATV ride up the mountain?
I don't know, but we should bring a Ouija board.
Oh my god, you and the Ouija boards.
I can't. Oh my god, it's so scary.
That's so scary. Where did we even get one? Target. I think they have them at like Toys R Us.
Probably.
We should do the light bulb thing.
What's the light bulb thing?
I'm an idiot. The flashlight thing. So, you've never heard of this? It's like a paranormal investigation technique, which I also have opinions on, but it's a thing where you get one of those like old-fashioned plastic flashlights, the kind that take like batteries, and you unscrew it, you turn it on and you unscrew it until the light goes off. But like just barely the light goes off. So if you touch it or tap it or whatever, the light might flicker on and off. And you set it down away from you so you're not touching it. And then you ask questions and the light will flicker on and off. You say like one, like on for yes or off for no or whatever. And ask questions and the ghosts can communicate by turning the light on and off.
We could do that.
It's.
That could be really creepy.
It could be really creepy.
Or.
But there is, like, some science behind why that happens that has nothing to do with ghosts. So I don't know that I could take that any more seriously than I could a Ouija board, but it's, like, I just think it's kind of a cool, theoretically a cool technique, especially because nobody has to touch it.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So you know that it's not like someone's turning it on and off. Like, no one is messing with you. It's just doing its thing. But yeah, we need to find a different way up the mountain than hiking. Because I think it's like a real hike, and I don't know if I could do that.
Cool.
And even if Doc Benton doesn't exist, I don't know that I would want to stay, like, camp up there if I knew that, that it was even, like, a tiny possibility.
Right.
Because who wants some kind of, like, super old guy wandering into their camp in the middle of the night and, like, touching you with old dude hands?
And poking you behind your ears.
Cutting out your lymph nodes or whatever. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird, but it's sort of coincidentally very close to, you know, the Frankenstein story. With that, like, crazy doctors trying to find the key to life or whatever. And it's sort of, I mean, it's sort of Rip Van Winkle-y a little bit.
I don't remember the Rip Van Winkle story.
That's the one where he, like, falls asleep for 100 years and he wakes up and he's all old and he comes back down.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
I don't know. I thought the part, the left ear part was really interesting to me, because it's like you said, like...
That is interesting.
Yeah, like, what is it about the left ear?
Yeah.
My dad said something about maybe the pineal gland?
What was that? What is that related to? Did he know?
Probably. But I don't. Or, like, maybe lymph nodes, or... Maybe the pituitary gland? Where's that?
I don't know.
The pineal gland is best known for the secretion of the hormone melatonin, which is released into the blood and possibly also in the brain fluid. Melatonin makes you sleep.
Yeah.
Maybe he really is Rip Van Winkle, Allie. Maybe the key to eternal life is sleeping for, like, hundreds of years at a time. And he just wakes up every once in a while.
Like, and, in a, like, cryo tank, but not an actual cryo tank.
Yeah, he just, like, goes into the, like, into caves in the mountains, like, when it's cold. and sleeps for hundreds of years in the mountain and then wakes up every once in a while and, like, pushes people off cliffs and steals picnic food. I mean, could you imagine, like, if you were that old and that's legitimately how you stayed alive forever, you would be crazy. You would be cuckoo bananas. You would completely be disconnected with reality.
The black cape thing is weird too. I can't imagine a lot of people walking around northern New Hampshire woods in a black cape. I mean, it would just be annoying, you know? It's just this cape walking around getting caught on branches and stuff like that. I feel like that's a little bit overdramatic.
Well, you mean like if it was not someone from the 1800s?
Yeah, if it's something that's more contemporary, if people are seeing him now, you think they're...
Well, no, but I was just looking it up. I was looking up black cape fashion time period, and I'm not getting anything because it's just a bunch of pictures of goth kids in black capes. But cloaks of 1860. I don't know, but it's just a creepy sort of visual of like, oh, this person is wearing, you know, a black cape that he's like a melodrama villain, mm-hmm. where he's flinging it around and holding it in front of his face and laughing maniacally. Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha.
It's interesting though. I mean, we hear about people that are very smart and have, like, this moment in their life where they kind of break or crack and they go off and into solitary and end up doing something crazy. I mean, I like the Unabomber, you know, and just it seems like that part is reasonable, you know, like it's happened before.
Yeah, yes. So I guess the legend itself of the doctor sort of losing his shit and starting to desecrate animal corpses and stuff, like, that's not unreasonable to believe. The idea that he actually found something and continued to cause mayhem. Like, I would be interested to know if there, because I couldn't find anything like this. There were so many stories. Like, there were so many articles, and I think I have, like, 12 different things listed on my references.
Wow.
I don't. I have 5 things. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, but there was a lot of stuff that I didn't put on the references because it was just the same story over and over again. But it seems like it's pretty well known.
I'll have to look it up and see if I can find any more. Yeah, that's interesting. I looked up Doc Benton stories in New Hampshire and Dartmouth Hitchcock. Ranked number one hospital in New Hampshire comes up first.
Oh.
Elixir of Life Campfire Story. Scary website. Scary for kids.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, the part where he kidnaps a toddler and throws the toddler over the cliff and, like, how he gets up the cliff, like, that is a little bit strange for me to believe. I don't know. And did they know that it was him?
Yeah, so that's sort of the story. But I guess the thing is, like, if any of this even happened, then who knows how much of it. You're talking about a town that still only has 500 people. So probably at that time, you're not going to have a lot of written history or, like, newspaper articles or things like that. I don't know. It's hard to say, like, because it could be so embellished. The part that I find really interesting is this idea of someone who, like, builds a shack on the top of the mountain to get away from everybody, like, completely secludes themselves, and then animals start going missing. And this is something that goes with stories about witches and werewolves and stuff all over Europe and everywhere, the idea of someone who's sort of creepy and outside of the norm being associated with the deaths of animals or of livestock or when, who knows, I mean, there might have been some kind of disease going around, a bunch of cows died and everyone was like, oh, it's Doc Benton. And then suddenly Doc Benton becomes the scapegoat for anything bad that could possibly happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, back then people were afraid of anything that they didn't understand. They didn't understand why he would run away and hide and be separated from society, you know, so they feared him and made up stories and,
right.
I don't know, embellished it.
I think that's probably pretty accurate. And it would be awesome if the rest of the story was true, if Benton really did have some golden boy who, like, came back from Heidelberg, Germany, and was their, like, amazing doctor. And it would even be kind of crazy weird if he was, trying to find the elixir of life, you know, if there was any truth to that. Could you imagine, like, if he had some kind of shack, being those friends that would go up there and be like, we gotta check on Tom. I haven't seen him in a while. And just finding a shack full of, like, cow glands and, like, weird shit in jars and...
Oh, no. What has he gotten into now?
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's cooking meth, so... I mean, could be worse. I don't even know. It's just a weird story. Because there's a big part of me that feels like, did this all just start at Dartmouth? Did this all start because that land was donated to a college?
Mm.
And, like, the first senior orientation leader was like, oh, I've got a story.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Maybe. I wouldn't put it past them to do that. I think that could make med school a little bit fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's... This is another one that, this is one that's, like, really unbelievable, but that, like, I secretly really want to be real.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, you find websites about it, and it talks about this monster, Doc Benton, and then it brings up Dartmouth College. On the show, Doc Benton is cobbled together from various people's body parts, like Frankenstein's monster.
No, that's not what I found. I got most of my information, not all of it, but I got most of my information from the book Passing Strange. So Joseph Citro is rad, and I highly recommend reading his books, but in the book Passing Strange, it talks about both the story and Dartmouth, and it talks about, like, more contemporary experiences of people. But it always sort of comes back to Dartmouth College, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It says, Doc Benton is the star of a ghost story used to scare freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
He's an insane recluse who kidnapped a girl named Mary, threw her off a cliff, and now he's obsessed with the idea of living forever. He has beaten death for centuries now and can continue to commit his 6 surgeries for eternity.
Ooh, someone should make a horror movie.
I wonder if they have already.
A Doc Benton horror movie called The Man of the Mountain. Although I feel like Mount Moosalak is, like, the least horror movie name for a setting.
Mount Moosalak, I know.
Dun, yeah. Dun, dun! Moosalak.
Moosalak.
Not scary sounding at all. But I don't know, if he is still alive, and he was born in, like, 1790, that is an old-ass dude.
Hmm.
That's a really old dude.
Or he could be dead and just haunting the mountain.
That was the other thing.
Messing with hikers.
Yeah. So what is your grade for The Old Man of the Mountain?
I don't know. I kind of like it. I'd say maybe A-.
I would have given it a B+. What? So why are you all the way up to an A? What is it that you like about it?
I don't know. Maybe I'm like a really nice grader. But I like the creativity of it. I don't know. It's like... I don't know.
I think you are. You're like, you put so much effort into telling this story.
I think that it's interesting, just the story of a really smart kid that is doing really well until his wife dies. And then it's like, yeah, you know, when you find yourself at rock bottom, you're going to go through the closet and you're going to find some weird weird science experiments, information from your mentor, and maybe you begin to think that, hey, maybe I can really find the answer to eternal life, and I'm going to go up and find it in the mountains, and I don't know. It's just creepy. It seems like, maybe it's cliche that this like mad doctor doing weird experiments on animals and people, but I don't know. I feel like I'm probably never going to want to hike Mount Musilak because you've told me this story.
Yay. Well, yeah, there is something, I think there is something like sort of gothically romantic about it, that idea of being so driven by your heartbreak that you just lose your mind and do something like against nature to try and never have to feel that heartbreak again or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know. I'm still going to say it's a solid B.
I can see that.
Nothing to, you know, be upset about. You could still hang that on the fridge. There are just some coincidences or so, like some things that I feel like are loose ends. Like the fact that the Thomas Benton that the town is named for was born at the same time, but clearly like shares nothing else about the character. So it's like, oh, we just picked a name based on this other historical person.
Yeah.
Hysterical person? Or like just that Dartmouth has the land, and so, and the whole, the bit with the college, the connection to the college, honestly, makes me think that it was all just made up there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder what the land is really used for.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's public. I mean, I guess it was donated to Dartmouth, but I'm pretty sure you can go and hike up there. So
yeah, probably.
It's not like private land. I don't know.
Hmm.
So I'm giving it a B.
Okay.
So if we average it out, it'd be like an A minus. Or a B+.
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 Yeah, I'm good with that.
All right. Well, we're on Facebook and Twitter, and you can email us at newenglandishaunted@gmail.com. Thank you to people who are already emailing us. We love your insights and your terrible jokes that are hilarious.
Yep.
It's really great to hear from people, and we'd love to get some ghost stories. And we won't debunk your ghost stories. I know that people have the experiences they have. So if you write us, like, I'm not going to tell you that you didn't experience something.
Yeah, when it's more personal like that, I think that it makes more sense. I think it's easier to debunk something that happened in the 18th century.
Yeah. Right. So, but we'd love to hear from you about anything, especially ghost puns. I love ghost puns. Thank you for subscribing and rating and reviewing. You can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify.
Nice.
CastBox? I'm ready. Are you ready? I'm ready.
Don't freak out. New England is haunted. Ha 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 ha.